Accession number 9338, Reel 1.
Marcus Turner, tape 1. Could I ask you first of all about your family background, Douglas? Whereabouts were you brought up?
I was born in Peckham, London, in 1918. My father was a serving soldier. He, having joined the army in 1908, he himself came from an Essex village, Finchinfield. My mother came from a working-class family in London. She herself was one of 13 children, and her own mother died when she was very, very young, so she was brought up largely by a stepmother and her own family.
Did you have any brothers and sisters?
I had one brother who was born in 1913. He himself joined the army later on. My mother at the time was living with her stepmother in London. They hadn't got a house at all. So my father, when he came out of the army in 1919 or 1920, had no home to go to. So they had to live in rented accommodation at the time. At one point, I think it was about 1920 or so, they were literally on the street in London, having been turned out of their accommodation, and were duly offered the workhouse. Fortunately, relations took them in and they managed to cope. They took various jobs on, sometimes in gentry houses, acting as cook and handyman. But ultimately my father found himself a more or less permanent job working in a grocer's shop in Chislehurst in Kent. From there I went to the local school, and in 1927 we were fortunate enough to be given a council house, which was almost like a mansion to us, because in Chislehurst we had lived in just two rooms, one a basement kitchen, living room, all contained in one small room, and a scullery, and one bedroom upstairs. So we had two rooms in total. So when we moved into a three-bedroom flat in Bromley, it was almost luxurious. But it wasn't long before I went down with a TB gland in my neck and was admitted into hospital. That continued on for some 2 years. I spent most of the time away from school, being in and out of hospital, until ultimately they took the gland out. But it was a very painful period, and at times I think I was very close to death's door.
Were your family religious? Were your family religious?
No. My mother used to like to go to the local mission hall round the corner. She tended to be a little, I won't say emotional, but she certainly liked the singing and the feeling that she was getting something out of it, I think, helped her to probably cope with the difficulties of living. My father was very objective and, in fact, tended to be quite sceptical about most religions.
Did your father talk much about his war experience, particularly World War One?
At first, he didn't. I think he was probably getting over the experience. He came back in, I think, in 1919 or 1920, and during when they were going through a very rough passage, I gathered later on from my mother that he got hold of his medals and very angrily threw them into the copper fire. My mother took them out again. That was his attitude, I think, towards what he called his loyalty to his country. For the next 12 years or so, I think he was probably thinking his way through things. Because in the early 1930s, he began to take quite a positive interest in politics. He began to hear the word socialism for the first time, and naturally I perked up my ears wondering what it was all about. And he ultimately joined the Labour Party. I think by this time his thoughts and feelings had coalesced into that kind of socialism which existed then, and I followed suit. I had seen at school the usual patriotic paraphernalia which existed in most elementary schools then, and we would march once a year to the local central hall where we listened to the local MP talking away, or in school itself the headmaster would prance up and down on the platform at the weekly assembly declaring to all and sundry that how brave the young men were at Zeebrugge and what a lot of young boys he had to teach patriotism to, and very few of them had any spunk whatsoever. We were mainly 13 years of age at the time. A few years later, of course, those same young boys were fighting in Dunkirk. No doubt the headmaster continued to prance up and down on the platform. Anyway, I joined the Labour Party League of Youth at about 15 years of age, and I found this very, very stimulating indeed. The cut and thrust of debate thrilled me, and I found I could participate and question. And then, in 1936, was it, 35, Dick Shepherd sent his letter to the press asking people who, particularly men, I think, of the First World War, who felt that they could no longer take part in a war, to write to him the simple pledge. The history of that is rather interesting, because he and Brigadier General Crozier, the two men who started the Peace Pledge Union, waited on the following days to see how many letters they would receive. The postman passed by, and they thought, well, no response. A short while later, a post office van drew up, the postman complaining that the post office should have had warning of the number of letters which were arriving, many, many thousands had arrived. My father was one of those. He had signed the pledge, although he had made the point that he would feel it necessary perhaps to reconsider the pledge should Britain be attacked. And I thought that was fair enough. Anyway, this aroused my interest, because by this time he was beginning to feel able, I think, to ventilate his own feelings and his own experiences of the war. I think it did him good. I think a lot had been bottled up, like many men who had returned. And the more I thought about it, the more I became aware that politics, religion and war were all linked up together. Thus it was that I found myself also joining the Peace Pledge Union, and I then became very active in the local group, which groups were quickly being formed all over the country.
Was your father a member of the PPU?
He joined, as I say, he joined, but later on, of course, as Hitler, the threat of Hitler began to spread, then he did feel that he couldn't go any further. He very much respected my stand, indeed, but he felt that it was necessary to take a stand against Hitler, realising at the same time that it was the incompetence of the Allied governments or the other governments in Europe which had given Hitler the impetus in the early days.
Were there many like your father who had actually signed the pledge, and when it came to war?
Yeah, there were. I think there were many like my father who felt emotionally concerned about the war, very emotive about it, and politically so too, but who felt that when the time came, this was a reality breaking through, and they felt that they could no longer continue supporting the Peace Pledge Union. I feel they felt they'd made a demonstration, but the die was cast, things had gone too far, there was no turning back, and very reluctantly they they felt there was no alternative other than to rearm.
Did you have any sympathy at all for them, you know, that view? Could you feel any sympathy for that view?
Yes, I did. I understood this very well. But by this time I had become more and more a convinced pacifist. I had also, interestingly enough, remember reading a series of very short articles in the old Daily Herald then, written by Philip Inman. Philip Inman was then secretary of the Charing Cross Hospital. He later was given a knighthood, and then I believe ended up in the House of Lords. But at the time, his simple articles were based upon the Sermon on the Mount and trying to interpret this into present-day society. And I was very deeply impressed by his simplicity and his interpretation of the Sermon on the Mount. I had never seen it made it so clear before. This impressed me very deeply at the time. And
what was the gist of that? What was he saying? How did he liken it to contemporary events?
I think he took the Beatitudes and tried to relate them to present-day living, comparing the needs of the people, the needs particularly of the working classes, the poorer people, the injustices, and expressing a need through Christianity to confront the problems which then existed. To me, it meant a lot. It was something completely new, and I began to look then, I think, at the New Testament more positively than I ever had done before. I mean, to me, it was just mumbo jumbo, something we repeated at school, having no idea what it meant whatsoever. Thus, when Dick Shepherd started his movement, I felt very much of a oneness. It all made common sense. I suppose I saw, rather oversimplifying it, Christianity and socialism being a single thing. It wasn't perhaps uncommon in those days that Christ was a socialist, as most socialists would claim. But as I remained in the Labour Party, I became aware that there were also difficulties there. Although the comrades wanted brotherhood, yet they were also quite prepared to kill other workers in other nations at the same time. To me, this just did not make sense. It wasn't logical, wasn't consistent, and I also became aware of also that the infighting which took place at election times and other occasions within the Labour Party, and I turned more and more then towards the Peace Pledge Union, because I felt that they had something more to offer. I thought they were clearer in their thinking, and I think they were more committed too. And thus I left the Labour Party.
Before you leave the Labour Party...
When?
Before we leave the subject, could I ask you about the personalities there? You know, was there anyone in the Labour Party that you felt was more your way of thinking than others?
I would say that the leaders then, like people like George Lansbury, had some impression on me, and I'd read some of Keir Hardie, of course. I was very much an idealistic socialist. I think that I didn't really meet the older members of the Labour Party. I was very much involved in the League of Youth. I delighted in their enthusiasm, but there was also a sense of, I think, already a sense of the cynicals breaking in, because I became aware that there was a lot of manipulation going on by the more intellectual element as they became more and more Marxist-oriented and began to join the Communist Party, and also try and undermine the Labour Party at the same time. This was certainly going on. And I suppose it was some sense of despair that I left.
How about the disarmament issue in the Labour Party?
Well, I think although the Labour Party's policy was certainly disarmament-oriented, there was already occurring at that time another level of political reality, which we can't deny. The growth of fascism was beginning to make a lot of people think, as it made me think, the Spanish Civil War, for example, and certainly, I mean, one couldn't divorce oneself from sympathy for the Republican government. I certainly had a tremendous sympathy for the Republican government. At the same time, I felt that having come to the pacifist position, I couldn't participate in violent resistance. Nevertheless, I do remember considering going out there as a volunteer, but not as a fighting volunteer. That didn't come to fruition. One of the other members of the local Labour Party, a very ardent communist, he went out and duly got himself killed. I don't know what effect this had upon me. I recognised his courage, I recognised his utter commitment, but I always felt he was something like that character in Animal Farm, the old horse, who did all the hard work whilst the more intellectual element stood by.
What was his name?
His name was Ken Bond. He's mentioned in, he's mentioned in The Distant Drum, a series of essays by Philip Toynbee. Ken Bond came, I think, from a very working-class country family. He himself was a cowman, very inarticulate. He used to go along, I believe, to the communist meetings and desperately try to study the Marxist philosophy. He couldn't grasp it, but nevertheless he felt it in his guts. Whenever he spoke about the capitalists, they were just bloody, bleeding capitalists, and he would like to slaughter the lot. In another life, he might well have been a saint, but it was too much for him to understand intellectually, and therefore he could only act it out in his life. This he did, and he paid the price.
Were there many like him?
No, I don't think so. There were a few. One always felt that the Communist Party was very much divided into two classes, the elite and the proles. Looking back, I think this was so. I'm not sure that it's very much different today, I don't know. But I think it was then.
Could I now ask you about the Peace Pledge Union, which you joined? What sort of organisation was it?
I suppose it was very much of a... To me then, anyway, it seemed very much of a middle-class organisation. I'm not quite sure this is wholly true, because I had sprung from the working class myself, and I was beginning to move into new ways of thinking, and therefore probably meeting different kinds of people who had come up from other levels. Nevertheless, there was an element of the working class thinking in the people of a working class background in the Peace Pledge Union. Generally, I suppose they tended to come from the white collar section of society. Nevertheless, to me, it was a time of opening and development I was experiencing new things. My job at the time, I think, was the baker's rounds one. I rather enjoyed this because it enabled me to get to know people as individuals, customers, their foibles, their feelings, their ways of behaviour, their psychology, and I found this most stimulating. Also, it gave me an awful lot of time for thinking because I wasn't doing a job work all the time. I was quite happy trundling along with my barrow, and gave me an awful lot of time for thinking, and I rather enjoyed that.
Well, would it have been a very tightly organised organisation?
No, it wasn't. No, it was a very flexible movement, and I think this made me respond to it. There was no firm discipline laid down. We had accepted the simple pledge, and within the movement we had people come from different professions, different religions, different backgrounds, atheists, agnostics, and all sorts of people. It was a pretty cross-section of society, so that I again was able to meet all sorts of new people and begin to develop my own thinking. I also appreciated the exchange of views, the sense of unity which was there in spite of our differences.
How did it relate to the other peace movement? You know, how did the PPU relate to the other peace movements?
I think there weren't many then at the time. The main one, I suppose, was the League of Nations Union. This, again, seemed to be largely a middle-class-oriented body of people. I went along to one or two meetings. I felt it was not going far enough. Everybody was well-intentioned, but nobody was really committed. And I wasn't all that impressed. I felt it was not radical enough, not positive enough. And I think the Peace Pledge Union was the... whilst it didn't grow out of it, I think it began to be a very serious challenge to it. There were one or two other pacifist bodies. There was a Fellowship of Reconciliation, which was the Christian pacifist section of the peace movement. I did join that as well, mainly in order to give it support. But my main love, I suppose, was the Peace Pledge Union. But most of the peace movements did work in well together, because there were also the Cooperative Women's Guild. I think there was also a Labour Pacifist Fellowship and other smaller peace movements. But the Peace Pledge Union took priority as it began to grow and have meaning.
When you said you belonged to these organisations, what would it have cost you financially? You know, did you have to subscribe to them on a regular basis, or did you donate funds?
No, I think if I recall rightly, this was left to each local group. I think later on, as the movement grew, I think there may have been some kind of subscription from the different local groups. I can't really recall that now. I think there must have been, otherwise the headquarters could not have coped. That I can't really recall.
When you think of the peace movement at this time, you know, is it right to call it that? Was there a real movement? Was it cohesive, you know, all these different groups?
I think the pre-war peace movement was certainly very cohesive. There was a bond throughout the whole country. Wherever one went and one met a PPU group, one was certainly sure of a warm welcome. I didn't take part in many marches, but I did take part in a few, and they were certainly very heartwarming. You felt a tremendous sense of oneness there, and I know that all marches are intended to produce this, but I think this went beyond just pure emotion. I think there was a genuine commitment there.
Can you remember any of these, you know, where you actually marched?
Yes, we We participated, I think, in May Day marches, and also we had one or two marches to Trafalgar Square. One I remember particularly sometime in the 1930s when we had a number of top-level speakers on the plinth at Trafalgar Square. One of them was Hugh Dalton, representing the Labour Party, very biting and very witty, although I'm not sure that I was all that impressed with him, because I felt he was certainly bellowing out. I'm not quite sure whether he didn't seem a bit violent at times. Then there was Beverly Nichols, very brilliant writer and a very impressive speaker, taking the mickey out of Lord Beaverbrook. We cheered him to the echo. Of course, after war broke out, Beverly Nichols was condemning his old comrades for hanging behind at Oxford and Cambridge while their friends were all fighting in France. Beverly Nichols continued to write for the Daily Express.
Any other notable people you remember? Did you ever listen to Donald Soper?
Yes, I did listen to Donald Soper. He certainly was very impressive, and one of the leading lights of the peace movement. I've never seen him downed in a question yet. On one occasion, Dick Shepherd came down to speak at a meeting we held in Bromley. He came in very modestly, and one was certainly very impressed with his openness and his friendliness and the way he appeared to greet every individual as a personal friend. He had a very warm, outreaching nature which seemed to speak to each individual, and I think it was sincere. It wasn't just a veneer.
Was his death much of a blow?
Yes, indeed. It was very, very sad, because if I recall, at the time of his death, I think on the same morning of his death, one of the Sunday tabloids had opened up a vicious campaign against him, and on the very Sunday morning, I think, in which he died, that particular paper was screaming abuse at him. I think the same thing applied also to his old friend, General Brigadier Crozier, Brigadier General Crozier, who again was under attack from the same Sunday tabloid, if I recall, for his book which he had just had published called The Men I Killed, in which he was very open about his own behaviour during the war, and his statement in the book that many of the soldiers had gone into battle only because other British soldiers were behind them, threatening to shoot them if they retired, and of course the tabloid press just would not accept this and accused